Our next speaker has very kindly stepped up into the gap that was left by Kasatu's struggles back in South Africa. He is a longtime social activist. He was involved in the South African Students Movement, which is an organization that played a very crucial role in the uprisings of 1976, commonly known as the Soweto Uprising, which that very famous photograph that Jamal ended with is from. He has worked as an educator in various unions, including affiliates of COSATU. He is a lecturer and teacher at Wits University in the Education Policy and the chair of the Palestinian Solidarity Committee, as well as having a very long and dedicated history in various other social movements. Welcome, please, Salim Valley.
Thank you, Larissa. When Jamal came and visited us in Johannesburg, we had an entire city hall packed to capacity and thousands of people, even before Jamal started speaking, started various slogans, one of which was "Free, free Palestine." Repeat after me. Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Thank you. Amandla.
Intifada.
Amandla.
Intifada.
Okay, some are saying Amandla Intifada. That also started after the conference against racism in Durban in 2001. The traditional slogan is Amandla Awetu, power is ours. And so we changed that. I understand those Palestinians who are with us in Durban went back to Palestine and a new slogan was born. That's the power of solidarity. And I'm very pleased that we started with Zainab and others with the Song of Honor, and I'm very glad to see the Six Nations struggle being highlighted in Caledonia and the two flags side by side, because it was a similar hall. And of course, the Palestinian struggle is a symbol for all oppressed people throughout the world for decades now, for those even in the first world who are homeless, who are poor, who are marginalized, those who face xenophobia. And when I came first to Toronto, about 5-6 years after the coup in Chile, it was a hall like this, largely with Chileans and Canadians who were involved in supporting the Chilean exiles. And the sentiments, the atmosphere was very, very similar to this atmosphere we have now. And when Zainab started with the chant, my mind went back to all these years and how today a supporter of the Zapatistas, Emmanuel Ortiz, has written a poem which tries to capture this feeling of solidarity after 9/11 and those who want to diminish that feeling of solidarity. And part of the poem is about how the struggles of the people who have survived the genocide in this part of the world continues. And it's a struggle of the survivors who are making common cause with the oppressed throughout the world. And there's a line in his poem which says that it's not just the innocuous poetry on the refrigerator of our consciousness, but the real living struggles of people, whether it's New Caledonia, the homeless and those living in poverty in the city, or whether it's those, the homeless, the evicted, those who have lost their jobs because they've been privatized in neoliberal South Africa. All the peoples of the world identify with the Palestinian struggle, and therefore it is not just the Palestinians these carriers of misery are facing, but the oppressed and exploited throughout the world. We've been following in the Palestinian Solidarity Committee in South Africa the developments in this city and in this country and the amazing work that Kaya is doing. I need to point out that trade unionists and those who are involved in social movements in South Africa were very inspired by the QP Ontario resolution. And in fact, it was because of that resolution that a few days ago, COSATU passed a similar resolution supporting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. And I assure you that Comrade Willie Madisha is here with us in spirit. He has been re-elected, and it's a pity he can't be here because of the exigencies of struggles, but he will come to this city. He has assured me in a telephone conversation that I need to express this to you. So he will be here with you. Now, in 2001, at the World Conference Against Racism, we put together a declaration which within a week was signed by over 10,000 South Africans. And in part it says, we South Africans who have lived through apartheid cannot be silent while another entire people are treated as non-human beings. People without rights or human dignity and facing daily humiliation. We cannot permit a ruthless state to use military jets, helicopter gunships, and tanks on civilians. We cannot accept state assassination of activists, the torture of political prisoners, the murder of children, and collective punishment. We South Africans faced apartheid and exploitation, bullets and prison, not with bouquets of flowers, but with resistance. We are proud of this, our history. This is the history of all oppressed people. Why should it be different for Palestinians? Born in squalid refugee camps, living in poverty, and believing the world community does not care, more and more young Palestinians see empty futures, aborted hopes, and feel unbearable frustration. And the great African-American poet Langston Hughes asked, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun and run all syrupy, or does it explode? And as South Africans, we note that it's apartheid again. And the system of Israeli apartheid rests on overt repression, a system of structural violence, and institutionalized discrimination that dehumanizes one group to the advantage of another. And apartheid Israel, as we've seen, and as Jamal has showed through the slides, has developed an elaborate system of racial discrimination embedded in its legal system, even surpassing apartheid South Africa's laws. Many South Africans who've been there, including the likes of Archbishop Tutu and others, have said that what we have there is worse than what we had in South Africa. And over the past few weeks, tens of thousands of South Africans, you might have seen in the news, have come out once again. The biggest demonstrations we've had since the release of our ex-president Nelson Mandela. It has prompted the South African Council of Churches, COSATU, which represents 1.8 million workers, and a range of social movements to stand together in support of Palestinian freedom. And South Africans say, the vast majority say, not those who benefited from apartheid South Africa, who also made common cause with Zionism then and who continue now. But the majority have said that we cannot be free until the Palestinians are free. Now, these laws in apartheid Israel include the law of entry, the law of return, citizenship law, legally sanctioned discriminatory rabbinical rulings, and the military service law. They've even introduced a law, which Jamal alluded to, which was akin to the Mixed Marriages Act. There was this disgusting law named the Immorality Act, which prevented people from living together if they wanted to and getting married. And that's a law that they've passed recently. So apartheid continues to live on. Of course, Palestinians, even those who are so-called citizens of Israel, are treated as third-class citizens. There are many scores of villages which are not recognized, and you've seen in the slides, basic municipal services are denied to them. There's discrimination for students and people going to university, and the Israeli curricula is filled with myths and racism against Arab people. There are many laws governing land acquisition and ownership, such as the law of acquisition of absentee property and the law of for acquisition of land, which blatantly and obviously discriminates against Palestinians. And we South Africans recognize segregation and apartheid when we see it. The policy of closures is a policy of segregation. Blockades which allow settlers free movement but restrict Palestinians have lost tens of thousands of workers their jobs. Some roads are for settlers only. The Israeli government issues identification cards and car number plates, color-coded, which restrict travel for people who are not Jewish. And of course, we've seen how people's movements are constrained, restricted, and how to get from one place to the other, short distances, you have to go through many, many checkpoints. And of course, the bigger picture, no significant industry has been permitted to be developed in the West Bank and Gaza. And consequently, Palestinians are concentrated in the lowest paying jobs and form a super exploited labor force for Israeli capital. And of course, Israel's apartheid is made all the more stark and brutal by the building of this horrific apartheid wall. So Israel is simply an apartheid state, and in the occupied, so-called occupied territories, it's a brutal military dictatorship, and apartheid laws such as the pass system, the identification system, influx control, Bantustans, job reservation, Bantu education, and laws resulting in unequal resource allocation continues. Very importantly as well, Israel has been and continues to be imperialism's watchdog. And under corporate globalization, we know that Israel receives succor, concrete support as well, in various ways. In return, it makes its own contributions to maintaining the imperialist world order and stability for transnational corporations, particularly oil companies. In the 70s, it was Israel that supplied the military dictatorships of El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua with more military hardware than the US did. And it continued and continues to support adventures and reactionary forces throughout the world. Of course, we in South Africa will never forget the support Israel provided to the apartheid regime in South Africa, while the world condemned apartheid in South Africa as a crime against humanity. Israel happily cemented nuclear, trade, cultural, military links with the white minority regime. And I have in front of me a book published by the Stop the War campaign called Do It Yourself Apartheid in Palestine, Israel, the World Bank, and Sustainable Development of the Palestinian Ghettos. It's not my intention to wave this in front of you like Chavez waved Noam Chomsky's book. I'm sure Amazon won't run off out of copies, but there's an article in here by Samir Amin. And I think it's a very important article because it talks about the role of Zionism and the state of Israel within the system of imperialism and gives evidence to show while Zionism and Israel has been from the very start, from 1948, the ally of imperialism. And it was a strategic choice made from the beginning by the Zionist leaders that Israel cannot be established and be sustained unless it is strongly backed by imperialism. He goes on to explain how Zionism and the state of Israel play a crucial role in the system, the world system, of corporate globalization or imperialism or corporate or global capitalism, and how it provides a military base in the region. Some have called Israel actually a military aircraft carrier in the Middle East that does its bidding for others. And it's proved its efficacy in being able to defeat all kinds of nationalisms or populist movements from in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, Nasserism, Baathism, etc. And Israel receives a strong financial support without which it could not survive. Of course, the despotic Arab regimes, we should not leave out of this equation. And their complicity in supporting the outrages done to the Palestinians. Additionally, Samir Amin and this book points out the role of international agencies like the World Bank, and of course now headed by Wolfowitz, the war criminal and a super pro-Zionist. And it embodies the common interest of global capitalism and Zionism and reaffirms US leadership over the imperialist collective. Samir Amin goes on to explain how this role of Israel functions in the world body politic and the aims of the World Bank, of US imperialism, and of the European community, and possibly elements in the Palestinian Authority, which wants it to lead to a miserable, miserable Bantustan that Jamal talked about, so miserable that the land given to Palestinians is even less than what the apartheid regime was willing to give the indigenous people of South Africa. But Samir Amin also talks about how he feels that they want to go beyond that, even beyond what you see, and that is through a process of slow genocide, of ethnic cleansing, stifling and strangling the Palestinians in the way Jamal explained, so that they could leave and increase the ranks of the close now, according to the UN, close to 7 million Palestinians in the diaspora. A month ago, exactly to the day, the South African law professor, I can be patriotic if it helps, although it is the last refuge of scoundrels, according to some. John Dugard, the law professor, who's the UN special rapporteur for human rights in the Palestinian territories, pointed out a number of things, and I would recommend that you get this particular report, which was read out to the General Assembly. It's very comprehensive. It talks about the situation, the crisis in Gaza, the horrible genocide taking place in Gaza, what's happening in the West Bank, the apartheid wall, Jerusalem, the settlements, the annexation of the Jordan Valley, house demolitions, checkpoints, separation of families in various ways. And John Dugard concludes the report by saying, this report does not make pleasant reading. Israel is in violation of important norms of human rights and international human rights law and humanitarian law. The need to bring the situation to an end is recognized by the international community, which has delegated power to the quartet comprising the UN, the European Union, the United States of America, the Russian Federation, to facilitate a peaceful settlement in the form of creation of a Palestinian state. But he says, unfortunately, at present, this goal seems to be lost to view as the quartet basically is complicit in the oppression of the Palestinians, all these countries, as it turns, and I quote, to punitive measures designed to compel the democratically elected Hamas government to change its ideological stance or to bring about regime change. He makes the point that this is the first time in history that an oppressed people, an occupied people, are being punished by the world community. Unprecedented. Instead of the perpetrators being punished. Whether the UN, he says, is in law authorized to make itself a party to economic coercion through the quartet without following its own procedures under the charter is questionable. In any event, diplomacy has given way to coercion. It is pointless for the special rapporteur, I quote, to recommend to the government of Israel that it shows respect for human rights and international humanitarian law. More authoritative bodies, notably the International Court of Justice in The Hague and the Security Council, have made similar appeals with as little success as have had previous reports of the special rapporteur. And this, I think, is very significant. It also seems pointless for the special rapporteur to appeal to the quartet to strive for the restoration of human rights, as neither respect for human rights nor respect for the rule of law features prominently on the agenda of this august body, as reflected in its public utterances. In these circumstances, this special rapporteur can only appeal to the wider international community to concern itself with the plight of the Palestinian people. And for me, what he's saying is clear. And I've heard and met John Dugard say this in many public places. It is in the hands of the citizens of the world. International agencies have shown their impotence. They have shown their uselessness. And it's up to us, the people, that mouthpiece of US imperialism, the New York Times, have labeled the other superpower. Those who took to the streets against the invasion and occupation of Iraq and others. Before I left, we invited our minister, Ronnie Casserles, who's Jewish, and he is very prominent in the campaign for boycotts and sanctions against Israel, a view not supported by our government. But Ronnie Castrels, who was instrumental in forming an organization of prominent Jewish South Africans called Not In My Name, has fearlessly and valiantly, despite the victimization of his family and his friends by the mainstream pro-Israeli lobby in the Jewish community, has written an article called The Rage of the Elephant, where he quotes prominent Jewish people throughout history talking about the outrages that are taking place at the moment and how many of the things done in the name of Jews is reminiscent of what the Nazis did to Jewish people, to communists, to gays, to gypsies, Roma people, and to people who they occupied in other parts of the world. And he concludes by saying that let us learn from what helped open white South African eyes. The combination of a just struggle reinforced by international solidarity, utilizing the weapons of boycott and sanction. As South Africans, in about 2 weeks' time, we're going back onto the streets. Unfortunately, the dominant group in our government have chosen a neoliberal trajectory. That particular trajectory is not just economic. It manifests itself in political terms as well. And it puts profits, it puts the interests of capital, of multinational corporations before principles. And in our country, which benefited from international solidarity, we believe we have to be in the forefront of this campaign for boycotts, sanctions and disinvestment. And we say that what is proposed for Palestine is a Bantustan, a state with a dependent economy, cheap labor for those industrial zones, no contiguous territory, and no substantial power, where Palestinians can be exploited, controlled, restricted, and confined in reservations. A dependent Bantustan alongside an apartheid state is a mockery of self-determination as it existed in apartheid South Africa and now in apartheid Israel. In Israel, no less than in South Africa, or in occupied Palestine, no less than in South Africa, minimum justice requires dismantling the apartheid state and replacing it with a democratic, secular Palestine where Jews and Arabs Jews and Arabs, Christians and Muslims live together, and atheists like some of us, live together with equal rights and opportunities. And so as South Africans, we said in the declaration to end, we observe the stone-throwing children of Jabalia, the beach camp, Balata, Khan Yunis, and elsewhere, and we receive the response to over five decades of outrageous tyranny and occupation. It is echoed in those in Israel like Mordechai Vanunu, who in 1986 was sentenced by a secret security court to 18 years in prison for exposing Israel's nuclear plans. If there's any country in the Middle East that is a threat to the world, to humanity, and that does have weapons of mass destruction and has used them, like the tens of thousands of cluster bombs it carpet bombed southern Lebanon with, which continues to take the toll on the Lebanese, even as they've left so-called, because they still occupy the Shabah farms, and particularly children that they have killed. It is Israel and not Iran, or as we've seen, Iraq. And all of us should reject the calumny that to condemn Israeli apartheid or Zionism's ethnic cleansing implies animus against Jews, or that it attempts to diminish the Holocaust. That does not work any longer. In fact, the opposite is true. And as the famed violinist Lord Yehudi Menuhin once said, he told the French newspaper Le Figaro, it is extraordinary how nothing ever dies completely. Even the evil which prevailed yesterday in Nazi Germany is gaining ground in that country, Israel, today. So we South Africans extend our hands to the heroic people of Palestine, and we believe that theirs is the struggle, slingshots in hand, of David against Goliath. Theirs is the vision of a country shorn off racist dominion. Theirs is the passion for life without oppression. Theirs is a struggle for Arabs and Jews to be free from discrimination and injustice. And as South Africans, we understand these struggles, visions, and passions. And we support the demand to isolate apartheid Israel, including the demand of the right of return and reparation for millions of refugees. Amandla! Amandla! Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.